I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So Grant Stewart is this year's Mr. Irrelevant. That's what they unceremoniously called the last player taken in the draft this time by the Buccaneers. But the Houston linebacker couldn't be more relevant to his family and his community. His mom was in the sex industry. His dad spent time in jail. Stewart had to take care of his siblings. And what happened on draft day? Well, it's emblematic of his life. We'll talk about a great story and be joined by Joy Knight of the Tampa Bay Times here in just a minute. What does Albert Pujols' career look like now? The Angels designated him for assignment on Thursday. And what is the expiration date on the Houston Astros saying they're being treated unfairly by fans of opposing teams? We're supposed to just get over it. We've got all that and more on this edition of Sports Day Tampa Bay. I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times, along with producer Steve Versnick. Steve, we'll start with baseball. And as we're taping this podcast, we don't know if, for example, Pujols will be traded or not, but the Angels designated him for assignment. I thought it was curious that he wasn't in the lineup against a couple of left-handers that the Rays threw at the Angels, and he's not having a good year. I haven't seen him enough to evaluate just how bad he's playing. He's 41 years old. You know, and I remember when they signed him to this unbelievable contract in what was considered middle age for a player at the time, I said there was no way that he could be productive and that he would ever, you know, live up to this amount of money. To be honest with you, he's managed to do his share and then some, I think.
He lasted longer than I thought. I mean, the last few years have been pretty rough. And, you know, the hard part for the Angels is he really can't play the field anymore. I mean, he's came in a couple games this week against the Rays, and you saw how slow and just immobile he is. He played a little bit of third base, played first base. You know, he's really just a DH at this point, but they have Shohei Ohtani, who they want a DH. So then how do you get his bat in the lineup? They now have a first baseman in Walsh who's better than Albert Pujols. I mean, the Angels probably would have done this a year or two ago, except for the fact they didn't have another first baseman that was better, or DH. Mm-hmm. And now they kind of starting to have a lineup that they've got players that are better than Pujols. And they're using so many pitchers. They only have a three-man bench. So when you have a guy like Pujols who really you don't want playing the field, it makes it really hard to operate. And, you know, one of the greatest hitters of all time.
Oh, yeah.
Incredible career. But when you sign a 30-year-old or 31, whatever it was when he signed the 10-year, $240 million deal, you know those last few years you might just be writing off. I mean, you know, you just basically take the charge for $240 on your accounting now, and however long it lasts, great. That's what it took to get him. You know, but no shame in what, you know, he's doing now. I mean, he's, what, 41, I think it is?
41 years old, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and so he doesn't move as well as he used to. Who does at 41 outside of Tom Brady? Although he never moved well in the first place, so maybe that's the secret to Tom Brady.
Set the bar low.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's a shame to, you know, you hate to see these guys who are so great in their careers that way, and he may get picked up by somebody else. I mean, it's possible the White Sox could sign him. They just, Lewis Robert just got hurt there, so they kind of abandon. It's old manager Tony La Russa's there, so it's possible someone either trades for him or, you know, picks him up once he, you know, clears waivers and all that stuff. But you know, the way it ended in Anaheim shouldn't take away from his career, because it's phenomenal.
He's batting under 200. He's got 5 home runs, I think 10 or 11 or 12 RBI, something like that. But if you saw him, there was a play that he did play in this series that I remember, where he attempted to tag up on a fly ball that was, I think, deep to left field or somewhere. And he didn't really get a great start. He sort of slowed up a little bit, and then he tried to go for a little acceleration that just wasn't there. It looked like me running to second. It was really bad. Albert Pujols, we'll see if somebody else picks him up or not. The other baseball story that keeps having legs, and I don't know when it will stop, are the Houston Astros, who are now like playing the victim. Now they want everyone to shut up already, despite their 2 years of cheating and one at least one World Series title as a result of it. They got the proverbial slap on the wrist, if you will, by the commissioner of baseball. Maybe some manager lost his job and some others, but at the end of the day, there's not an entire team of of offenders, but the main ones are there, and they went to New York, where Yankee fan can be kind of nasty. What I would say is, hey, Astros, be glad you don't have full stadiums for the last two seasons. I mean, their timing couldn't have been better for them. And yet, everywhere they go, it's like Dusty Baker has to have a press conference telling everybody how unfair they're being treated.
Well, a couple things. One, this is your first time into these stadiums with fans in the stands since you got busted for this.
Right.
So, because you go to New York for the first time, because you got booed in two other stadiums, you think it's the fans should stop booing you? That's a little ridiculous. And you're only bringing more boos on you when you do this. Two, So the boos rain down on you in New York, and you're upset. The Rays had baseballs raining down on them from the stands in New York.
That's right.
I'll take the booze any day, first of all.
Yeah, man.
And Dusty Baker's been playing this card for a while of, get over it. Not one player got punished for cheating and stealing a World Series. Not one player. Now, the general manager did. The manager did. Mm-hmm. But not one of those players did. And the fans are upset. And particularly fans in Tampa, New York.
Mm-hmm.
Los Angeles, who got beat by those Astros teams, they should be really ticked, and I don't blame the fans. And if you can't take a few boos in the stadiums, then what are you doing playing baseball?
Well, what they also can't take, perhaps at least in the case of Jose Altuve, who was on a Hall of Fame arc, is maybe not knowing what's coming, because I think since this Scandor outbreak, he's batting about 80 points lower than his career average. So
when you don't know what pitch is coming,
it's amazing. Yeah,
you don't bat as well.
Yeah, I'm sure there's no correlation whatsoever, but certainly is showing up in the box score. So yeah, that was kind of interesting for sure.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
One of the most interesting draft picks I can remember as far as his personal story is Grant Stewart from the University of Houston. The last pick in the NFL draft, as I mentioned earlier, they call Mr. Irrelevant. They actually have a celebration somewhere in California, I guess, for that player. But Joey Knight wrote an unbelievable story in the Tampa Bay Times that you can read on Sunday. You can read it on TampaBay.com now. And Joey joins us. Joey, I mean, when I heard this story the first time, I couldn't believe it. When I read what you wrote and the people you were able to get to talk about Grant, and you talked to Grant about his story, I mean, it has everything, right? And the kid is, as you say very succinctly, he is anything but irrelevant. He has been through a lot, continues to go through a lot. Let's just start with the fact that this is not a guy of privilege, right? This is somebody who has had a hard scrabble life.
No question, Rick. And I'm like you, the more I dug into this story, the more amazed I got. I mean, we spoke to him Saturday immediately after the draft. He was made available to us on a Zoom call, and he just got in, he just scratched the surface of how difficult his upbringing was. And the more people I spoke to, the more I dug. It just hard scrabble is probably too weak a word to describe what he came from. His father, whom he very politely declined to mention by name, but he did say his father's been in prison. He's no longer in prison, but he has logged time in prison. And his mother, which he has made very clear in the past, formerly worked in the sex industry and is still battling with her addictions. And of course, what really just blew me away is during the course of our phone conversation Tuesday, and the kid volunteered this. He said, you know, my mom got arrested, you know, just a couple hours after I got drafted. And I looked it up, and sure enough, she did. So here's a woman who's still battling some of her own demons. And Grant has four younger siblings, so he was literally in a position. And I wrote this in my story. It's on TampaBay.com right now. Long, long before he was Mr. Irrelevant, he was Mr. Mom, because he had to be. Mm. He was the only, by age, you know, by, you know, chronology, he had to kind of take ownership of the home and see that his younger siblings got fed or, you know, had milk in the refrigerator and things of that nature. He told me, you know, a couple of times he missed the bus. There was nobody to take him. So he kind of just basically swiped his grandmother's car and drove himself to school at age 11 or 12. And it's kind of crazy. And you think these things, Rick, when you write these things, you think, okay, maybe he's exaggerating. Maybe this is a little bit of hyperbole. The people I've talked to said, no, this kid really kind of came from nothing. And, you know, made himself into an NFL prospect. It's really kind of amazing. And we try, you know, we as reporters have to be objective, but how can you not root for somebody who's come from this kind of upbringing to make the roster? How can you not root for that to happen, you know, with the Buccaneers?
It's a wonderfully written story. You started with what we all witnessed during his Zoom call. The Bucs, so you know the procedure, they will draft a player, and then sometime shortly thereafter in the virtual world that we all live in, typically we would be at the Bucs facility and they would get the guy on camera over there, or they would fly him in, you know, the next day depending on when they were drafted. But in this case, we got Grant on a Zoom call. It was the end of the draft. And while he's talking to us, describe the scene that is occurring. Now, he's at his house, and there's a good number of people there, including, and maybe one of the few times in his life this was the case, both his father and his mother are in the house.
Yeah, he said that is one of the few times that they've had that kind of family moment together during his childhood. And he said, I give them credit, you know, there may have been, you know, a few Christmases when we were together, you know, a football game or two where we were all together, but I had that moment with them draft night. They were there. And yes, he was speaking to us on the Zoom call in one of the old school creamsicle Bucko Bruce Bucks hats. And that's a whole different story.
Yeah.
He's a hat guy. His dad's a hat guy. And his dad was just looking for something to wear on draft night. And he just came across that. It's not like he, you know, he had this premonition that the Bucks were going to draft his son. He was just looking for a hat to wear, and he found it and gave it to Grant. So, you know, on draft night, Grant Stewart is wearing an old school Bucks hat. But anyway, he's talking to us with that Bucks hat on during the course of the Zoom. And this woman, you know, looks to be about around 40-ish, mm-hmm. walks in, dark tank top, blonde hair. And she just says, you know, kind of a raspy voice. She said, hello. And Grant chuckles and goes, hey, that's my mom. And she stands there for 2 or 3 minutes while he's talking to us. She doesn't say another word. She's just standing there, and he continues to speak with us. And then I think her phone goes off and she walks off camera, and we don't see her mm-hmm. again. And we complete the interview with Grant. So that's how that goes. And a couple of days later, you know, I wanted to explore this story more. I wanted to write more about this kid after we learned on the surface from our Zoom call with him. I thought it was fascinating. Right. So the Bucks were nice enough to set me up on the phone with him. And during the course of our conversation, he says, yeah, you know, just for you to know what I'm dealing with, my mom was arrested shortly after the draft. And I looked it up, and sure enough, that happened. I think it was something involving the unauthorized use of a vehicle and possession of a controlled substance. It was the official titles I saw on the charges. So that's what he's dealing with. And I said, that's an incredible metaphor for this kid's yeah. life. Parents popping in and out of the picture, like we saw when we were interviewing him. And, you know, just going on and talking to other people. That's how it was. You know, Grant is very heavily involved with this nonprofit faith-based program based in Houston called Heels to Halos. And it was founded by a former strip club dancer who's kind of turned her life over to Christianity. And her whole mission is to try to reach and rescue women from the strip club and the sex trafficking industry. And she told me one of her former coworkers used to be Grant Stewart's mother. So it just got more and more incredible as I dove into it. But this kid is the real deal. And Jason Light said something interesting, you know, and I will, I'll try to call up his exact quote. Yeah. He said, guys that can get through tough times and adversity, that's a big box check for us. And he said, we definitely think that helps them in their chances of making our football team. So you got a guy who's been through tough times and adversity. Grant Stewart sure meets that prerequisite.
Yeah, with flying colors. You talked to Megan McCallum is her name, and she's the one that was the founder of Heels for Halos. And as you mentioned, they rescue women from the sex industry. Grant pledged money to raise funds for each repetition he did in the bench press. They bench press 225 pounds. You try to see how many times you can do it. He did 28, which I can tell you is, you know, offensive lineman territory. I mean, that is not your typical linebacker. Anything that approaches 30 is remarkable for anyone. So he's a very strong guy. He raised $5,300 for that Houston-based organization, you report. And, you know, listen, there's a lot of guys that grow up with varying – that's the great thing about the NFL, right? You have all walks of life. You have all races and creeds and economic situations and all of that. But as I talked to John Spytek and Jason Light, I think what they have done that quite frankly is – you know, kind of turn the fortunes of their franchise is, you know, you can find good players, right? It's easy to watch tape and say this guy can play. But when you get to the NFL, like life, there's an awful lot of adversity that comes with that responsibility, you know, and
right.
Whether it's injury, whether it's learning how to handle finances, whether it's being away from home and away from family, you know, how independent you are can eat you alive. I mean, I can remember when Ronald Jones, who went to USC and was from Texas, came to Tampa Bay. He was all of about 20 years old, turned 21, I think, shortly thereafter. He wasn't ready for a professional life. He wasn't ready to be away from people. He wasn't, you know, all of a sudden you walk into a training camp and you've got guys that have played as long as Tom Brady, 21 years, and many much less, obviously, but they've got wives and mortgages and children and you know they're grown ass men and you're right out of college, so
right.
there can be quite a culture shock just in and of itself, and then you find out shortly thereafter how cutthroat and competitive it is just to get one of the top 61 spots. Forget about 53. You want to make the practice squad at least. But I think, you know, if you look at their draft picks this year, Joey, and led by Stewart's story, there's a lot of guys that have dealt with adversity. There's a lot of guys that have emerged as captains of their team.
Right.
I think Stewart was a real leader of that Houston team. There's no question about that.
He was a team captain. KJ Britt from Auburn, the linebacker from Auburn, was a team captain. Robert Hainsley from Notre Dame. I'm not sure if Trask was a captain of Florida, but he may as well have been.
He's a quarterback. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, they kind of put a premium on that. And, you know, you talk about guys who just aren't going to flinch when things go wrong. You know, obviously Grant Stewart's going to fit in that category. Jalen Darden has had some hardships. I think he's lost some people in his life who he was close to. So you've got some guys, you know, the best way I can describe it, who are not going to flinch. Because adversity, as you mentioned, is invariably going to come at this level, especially when you're a young guy just trying to find a job on a roster. You know, things are going to come at Grant Stewart pretty fast and furiously. He's going to get knocked down, but he's not going to flinch. And I'll tell you this, as much as he has flourished in Houston, and he was raised in a suburb north of Houston in Conroe, Texas. It's about 45 minutes north of Houston, from what I gather. As much as he's done for that community, not only working with Heels to Halos, but he's had other kind of fundraising drives like school supply drives in his native Conroe, Texas. And he helped helped stock a food bank in Houston. He has done those type of things, and he's become an outstanding citizen just in the Houston area community. I think it will be a good for him to get out of that environment for a little while and, you know, just come and try to make his bones in Tampa Bay, because obviously there are some negative factors there as well. And clearly he has overcome them, but sometimes guys like that also could use a change of scenery. And I'm not going to talk for Grant Stewart, but I just gather that it may be good for him just to get out, you know, into another time zone in another city and try to make it on his own. He's getting married. He told me he's getting married in July. He's engaged to a University of Houston cheerleader who he's been with for some time, and they're getting married in July. So I think this fresh start is wonderful for him. And you know, for guys who have just come up from that bleak, hard scrabble background, it can rejuvenate them. And I think this could also rejuvenate Grant Stewart.
What's remarkable is that you think about, you mentioned, you know, when he was 11, he was actually trying to drive a car, whether it was to get groceries or those kinds of things. And you know, he made it as an athlete, even in high school. You know how hard it is sometimes just to be a high school student and make it to these extracurricular activities. But with all that was on his mind and all that he had to deal with, I guess the worst thing you could say about him is that sometimes he might run a little bit late here and there for various things, whether it was classes or practice. But, I mean, give the kid a break. And then, you know, I guess because of all that he had to think about, Joey, it was hard for him to compartmentalize everything. I mean, he had a lot on his plate, so he was more of an instinctive C-ball hit guy, you know, a player than one that really got too deep into the X's and O's of things.
Yeah, and that at Houston, from what I gathered in my conversation with him, that really started to take effect at the University of Houston, where he evolved from a special teams guy to a nickelback to a linebacker. You know, the game started slowing down for him. His mind started slowing down, as you mentioned, and he really became an instinctive player. But I was talking to his secondary coach, his co-defensive coordinator at Oak Ridge High School in Conroe, where he went, and he said, hey, Grant was a cerebral guy from the beginning. He told me about a playoff game one time where they had Grant at free safety. This defensive staff felt, hey, you put your best athlete at free safety. So they put Grant there, and they were warning him before a playoff game, hey, this quarterback, when he rolls out, he's going to fling it. You just got to watch for that, and he's probably going to fling a post. And the first time Grant kind of bit on it and got beat, and he came back to the sideline and said, coach, that'll never happen again. I know what you're talking about. And the next time that kid rolled out and had his eyes kind of toward the post, and Grant just started backpedaling, and the kid flung it, and Grant intercepted it. So this coach told me, his name is Danny Barber. He said nobody spent more time in the film room than Grant. And in terms of just, you know, being a loyal, dependable guy, he said, you know, for all he went through, he said, I don't recall Grant ever missing a practice or a summer workout. And he said, you know, there may have been times we had to go pick him up, but that's pretty normal for at the high school level. You know, coaches give kids rides all the time. You know, that's par for the course. But, you know, he said he was just a very dependable and a very smart football player. I think what was happening with Houston is just, you know, as you get to college and classes, and he's still dealing, you know, with his parents and the demons that they're battling, and he's worried about his siblings, and he's got a girlfriend, you know, his mind just started to get a little convoluted. And he credits the clearing of his mind with just really recommitting himself to his Christian faith. He said that had a big part of it. He said a great kind of peace overcame him when he made that decision in his life. And, you know, again, just his mind for the game, just the kind of the film rat that he is, that also contributed to it too. And you saw in the last couple of years at Houston, the game really slowed down for him, and he became a force of nature right there in the middle for the Cougars.
On Sunday, September 22nd, 2019, he says he devoted himself fully to Christianity. He was raised sort of in the church, sang in the choir, right, all of that, but really committed to Christ. And he said, and ever since then, God has really taken care of him. In fact, that's shortly after he met his Houston cheerleader girlfriend. I believe you write that 6 days later, he had a team high 11 tackles in a route over North Texas and snapped the two-game skid. So things went well and have gone well for him. And yet he had to wait a long time to be drafted. And there's no doubt about that. I mean, that wait can be eternal. I think he told us that, he felt like that was probably going to be it, that he was going to have to start dealing with teams calling to get him signed as an undrafted free agent. Cause that's what happens when even before the draft ends, teams start calling guys they believe aren't going to be drafted. And it becomes a competition to see, who you get the best players that, cause there's only seven rounds. Back in the day, there were 10, 11, 12 rounds. Brad Johnson was a 10th round pick, for example. He would not have been drafted either. Had a pretty good career, won a Super Bowl. So, all of that was important. Nothing could be more important than him right now, though, with all that he has on his plate, than to make this football team. And the fact is, this is a veteran team with 22 returning starters, with an awful lot of veteran backups, with an entirely new draft class, and then a bunch of undrafted free agents they have signed. And yet, there seems to be a real emphasis. Obviously, when you come to the NFL, unless you're Mike Evans or, I'm trying to think of somebody, Jameis Winston, unless you're somebody who already knows what role they're going to have when they get there, you're going to have to play special teams. And that's sort of where he will make his bones. But he's talked about bringing his younger brother with him to Tampa. Right. And making this team will, in effect, change his life. Obviously, he's got, the foundation to do whatever he wants to beyond football. But Jason Light made an unbelievable comparison to Grant, and it was another undersized linebacker that played for the Miami Dolphins, Larry Izzo. And, I mean, Larry, when we talk about Larry Izzo now, that's heady comparison right there.
No question. And first of all, Grant is embracing that. He was a special teams kamikaze initially in Houston. And he understands that's what he's going to have to do to make this football team. So he embraces it. And he seems to understand that you can come in and you can make a fine living just making that your niche. I heard the same thing you did. You know, Jason Light talking about Larry Izzo. When Jason was with the Dolphins, they signed him out of Rice, which isn't terribly far from Houston. And
that's right.
He was an undersized linebacker, but he played with just tremendous heart and passion for the game. And, obviously, he had an outstanding career. And he kind of, he says, we're not kicking Grant to the curb. When the defense goes out on the field, he's going to line up on the inside in that 3-4 and, compete for a spot on the depth chart on the inside. But, he said our short-term immediate vision for him is for special teams, just somebody who can go down there and just blow up a block and flatten somebody. Simple as that. And this guy seems wired to do that. He's also very fast and very tough. Something that I wanted to get more into in my story, Rick, but I wasn't able to. This guy was on the leg of a 4x400 meter state championship relay team at Oak Ridge High.
In Texas. Think about that. I mean, how many great athletes are there to run the 4x400, right?
4x400, a linebacker running the 4x400. And this coach told me in one of his meets, it was very close, this kid dove across the finish line. Now you're talking, I don't know if it was a rubberized surface or if it was cinder block or what, but it was hard, I'm sure, if they're running track. And he dove across the finish line just so his team could win the race. The coach said he's the toughest kid I've ever seen in my life. So you've got a kid with that kind of mentality coming to try to win a job playing special teams for the Bucks, and that's exactly the type of mentality and approach you got to have.
It's an unbelievable story. You'll recognize him with his big mane of hair as well, that he's proud of and that he'll be running with tucked under his helmet when he does get a chance to play for the Buccaneers. Check it out, the Tampa Bay Times. One of the best stories. Joey really did a great job with this in a long time, I can tell you that. There's another race. Speaking of races, the Gasparilla Distance Classic, you're going to be involved in the coverage of that, I guess, at some level. What kind of races are we expecting in these somewhat COVID-separated days? What does that look like?
Well, I guess the best way to describe it, Rick, is virtual. It's scaled down. Obviously, they had to limit the registration because we're still in the waning stages of this pandemic. And so you're not going to have a traditional start and, you know, starting time where everybody lines up at the start and there's a shotgun start. That's not going to happen. They are roping off Bayshore Boulevard, the normal course for the Gasparilla, for the 5K and the 8K and the 15K, the normal course that people would run. They're roping that off from 5 a.m. to almost noon Saturday and Sunday. And people who have signed up for the Gasparilla, and there's a lot fewer registrants this year. Again, as I indicated, they had to really scale back the turnout and the number of registrants. But there's going to be a few thousand, and those people who have signed up are free to go out there during those days, Saturday and Sunday, from 5 to 11:45, and you can run the course virtually. You won't be timed. There won't be any electronic timing, but you can time yourself and download your time onto the Gasparilla website. So there's still going to be the Gasparilla Distance Classic is just not going to have all the bells and whistles. You're not going to have, people handing out cups of water. Runners are responsible for their own hydration. You're not going to have the DJs. You're not going to have the music along the course and people handing out donuts and stuff like that. And a bleacher of people watching at the end and, you know, all the pageantry at the finish line. But they're going to have a race and they're going to have a medical staff from Tampa General there with a medical tent in case something goes wrong, because it's going to be kind of hot. It's just going to be a scaled down version this year, just out of necessity. And obviously the hope we all have is that next February we can go back to the good old Gasparilla Distance Classic with 10 million people, you know, in downtown Tampa running along Bayshore.
Amen. Before that, you get to go down and attend Dickie V's gala. Every year he does this thing to raise money for pediatric cancer. And who are his? He normally has some guys that he's honoring in some form or fashion. So who are the guests of honor in this one? Do you know?
The guests of honor are Dan Mullen, Muffet mm-hmm. McGraw, the legendary women's basketball coach at Notre Dame. And Chris Mortensen, Mort, who is a throat cancer survivor. He's getting the John Saunders Courage Award. So those are some of the honorees. Other dignitaries, a bunch of people with Buccaneers ties, Bruce Arians, Jason Light, Mike mm-hmm. Allstott, Jimmy mm-hmm. Giles, I think, is going to be there. Kyle Trask, according to Dickie V, Kyle Trask is going to be down there. So a lot of people from USF. So a lot of sports dignitaries. And I can assure you of a couple of things. A lot of money will be raised for a very, very good cause, pediatric cancer research. That's one thing I can guarantee you. The other thing I can guarantee you, Dickie V will be moved to tears, because he always is. He gets up there and he introduces some of his special guests who are pediatric cancer patients, and he knows their backstory front to back. This is not an act. He knows these kids. He has a relationship with them, and he brings them up and he talks about each and every one of them. And by the end of the night, when he introduces these kids and talks about them and shares how special, you know, just this fight against cancer is, you know, he is moved to tears and he will openly weep. And it's a very poignant, very special night. His goal is to raise $5 million. And I think he's going to do it. It's just that kind of a special atmosphere and event, you know, when you're talking about a cause like that.
He does an unbelievable job. The passion is real, and the stories are very, very inspirational as well. Joey Knight, check him out in the Tampa Bay Times on TampaBay.com. Terrific stuff, Joey. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you, Rick. Appreciate it.
All right, my thanks to Joey. The Lightning, by the way, host Dallas tonight. See if they can continue their mastery of the Stars. And then it's Florida on Saturday.
Saturday and then Monday, and then the regular season's over.
Then they're so done, yeah. They're
final three
finished.
Games.
And then I think they're going to have maybe some break as Canada wraps up their season.
So Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet is usually pretty plugged in, saying that it sounds like the playoffs are going to start next weekend, the 15th and 16th.
Okay.
So that would be if they started on the 15th for the Lightning, give them 4 days off in between, which is about typical. Normally the regular season ends on a Saturday, and then the playoffs start that Wednesday or Thursday for teams, depending on, you know, some teams start Wednesday, some start Thursday. So that's about a typical rest. The Lightning probably would prefer a little more to help for Steven Stamkos and Nikita Kucherov and Jan Rutta to return from injury. But, you know, 4 days is better than, say, one or two. So,
yeah, no, it should be good. And then the Rays continue their series on the West Coast against the Oakland A's. The Bucks minicamp, we have dates for that. That is now going to be next Friday and Saturday. They will have some walkthroughs. We'll have some Zoom calls with some of the draft picks and the free agents that they have signed. They will have practice beginning at 1:30. It is not open to the public, so stop asking me. No, I'll be there. I'll let you know what's going on with Kyle Trask. Will be the, you know, the big zinger of the football since it's rookies only. So we'll have all that coverage for you next weekend as well. As well as next Wednesday, the NFL schedule comes out.
When?
That's right. 17-0, man. And the big mystery is who's the opener? The Bucs will likely open the entire NFL season on a Thursday night before week one or for week one of the NFL season.
They're going to open in Philadelphia, correct?
That's what they did last time. Oh, man. John was so – he's still mad about that. So that's what they did last time. So this time they will be, we hope, at least I do because I don't want to travel, at home. And the candidates are – let's just – I would say eliminate the division teams because they typically don't do that for the – they've done it for regular season openers. In fact, the Bucs have played New Orleans the last 2 years in the season opener. But for a national TV game, they try, I think, you know, to kick off the NFL season, I think they try to avoid division games. And so if you just look at who their home opponents are, they play the AFC East. They have the Dolphins that come here. They play – some NFC East teams, the Dallas Cowboys come here. As a quirk of finishing second in their division, the Chicago Bears come here. And, oh, yeah, because it's the AFC East, nobody circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills. That's my favorite. I think it's going to be Bills, the AFC East champion and the AFC AFC title game loser, of course, to Kansas City last year, Josh Allen against Tom. I think that would be, to me, that would be a great, great opener for the season.
That would be the best football matchup. But the NFL typically goes within the same conference for those openers. They don't typically cross conference for the opener.
That's true.
So
that's true as well.
I think it's going to be the Cowboys. And I think the Bears are the second choice and Buffalo would be third.
Okay.
By the NFL. I think for the television matchup and for star power and of brand names, the Cowboys versus the Bucks, Cowboys versus Tom Brady.
I think Dak Prescott.
I think that's in Dallas market compared to the Buffalo market. I think it'll end up being Dallas. And the second choice would be Chicago because it's a big market and big team name.
This is all good. We'll know by Wednesday if it doesn't leak out before that. According to my sources, it could leak out before that.
You want Andy Dalton versus Tom Brady for the opener, right?
Oof. Woof. Well, what if it was Justin Fields?
It could be Justin Fields, but they keep saying Andy Dalton's QB1. But
yeah, we'll see about that. I don't think Andy Dalton can hold him off. I'll be honest with you. I think they're going to see Justin Fields run and make plays, throw and make plays, and I think they're just going to say, you know what, let's just put him in there. Everybody knows he's the best quarterback we have. Let's go for it. But I might be wrong. We'll see. And finally, have a very happy Mother's Day. Take care of mom, your wife, anyone that has meant so much to you and still does over the years. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. For Steve Burstyn, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.